Okay, good morning. Happy Tuesday. I'm calling the meeting of the Capital Investment Committee on Wednesday, January is it January 22nd?
No, it's
February 11th. Thank you. February 11th to order. And there is a quorum present. All right. And before we get into today's hearing, we're just going to go around the table and do some introductions again. And members, there are some bagels and cream cheese at the table. Even though we don't have a bill hearing in front of us, I just thought it'd be a great icebreaker for some of my favorite people of the Capitol to be fed while we have this interesting and fun hearing before us today. So at any rate, let's start with Representative Reimer, and we'll just go around, a little introduction and a fun fact about yourself.
Fun fact, huh? Thank you, Chair. My name is Max Reimer. I am the representative in District 28B, which is Chisago County. Excited to be on Capital Investment. We're a growing county, and besides getting teacher Valentine emails, the number two thing I would say I'm getting emails about is just different projects in the district. So fun fact about me is I got three kids. That's probably a boring fact, but they keep me busy, and we're going through a cookbook together right now. They got me a cookbook for my birthday, so we make a recipe every Saturday. I'm not usually a cook, but I'm doing my best. So thank you.
Andrew Myers, this is my second term. I represent 11 cities in the western portion of Hennepin County. Excited to be on this committee again. We had some, good projects we saw. That was always, interesting to get around the state and, see the different needs around Minnesota, as well as, building relationships in this room. Fun fact for me, I have four kids, and I am currently, a soccer coach for one of my kids because my wife signed me up. So, my plate's pretty full, but I'm trying to do what I can.
Good morning. Representative John Kosnick, live in Lakeville, represent the city of Credit River, half of Lakeville, Elko, Newmarket, and then two townships. This is my first time on the Capital Investments Committee. Madam Chair, I appreciate the carbs this morning, the bagels. We had state government finance. I have not moved. This is going to be my spot. So I'm really happy to be here and the bagels for breakfast. Little fun fact, since we're going to talk about kids, I guess. My oldest daughter goes to the University of Kansas. So this weekend I got up early on Saturday, cruised on down there. The colonel's here. I abided by the speed limit. And had 6.5-hour drive down there, but we got to watch half of the Super Bowl. And then at halftime I drove halfway back up here, but it was a fun weekend to be in Kansas City, have some barbecue, and spend some time with my oldest daughter, and I have one other daughter.
Madam Chair, my name is Roger Scrabas, second term, second time on Capital Investments. It was so much fun with Chair Lee that I said, I need to keep doing this. I represent the district, 11,700 square miles, largest district in Minnesota. A lot of capital investment needs, but more than that, just a very diverse group of people, and it's a pleasure to serve them. Something fun, I don't know, I guide canoe trips, and I go in the woods a lot with different people, and I could literally write books about some of the people I've been with, but we'll save that for another time. Thank you.
Good morning, buddy. My name is Tom Sexton. I'm a freshman. I probably tell by all the new look. Glad to be on this committee. There's so much we can do for all of our infrastructure needs throughout Minnesota, especially in outstate Minnesota. Fun fact, I lived in Iceland, the Philippines, and Germany throughout my military career, and then did a lot of work throughout our country building pipelines.
Hello, everybody. My name is Keith Allen. I'm the representative from 19A, which is about an hour south here and encompasses the communities of Kenyon, Wanamingo, Janesville, Faribault. In my personal life, I farm. I'm a small business owner. And what got me interested in bonding and everything in public infrastructure was I worked for Congressman Finstead, also full time. I'm a glutton for punishment. I like a lot of jobs. I worked for Congressman Finstead and saw firsthand the importance of bonding and the impact it has on outstate communities. Interesting fact about myself. On our farm, we raise dairy goats, registered dairy goats, and we show them throughout the United States. So,
Marge Fogelman, my district is 21B, which the major cities are St. James, Windham, Worthington, and Jackson. It's my second term, my second time on capital investments. Fun fact, I've been married almost 30 years next year, so.
My name is Karina Nelson. I am the CLA for this committee.
Fun fact.
Oh, fun fact, I started in January. This is my first session.
All right, Mary Franson, and super excited to be chairing this committee. And although I have to say that I did stay up a late on Thursday night panicking about how we're going to afford the heaper in the state, that was not fun. So I know what Chair Fu Lee went through previously, right? Same thing. Fun fact about me, I love golfing, and I am just itching for warmer weather and no snow. So that's my life.
Joe Marble, committee administrator for the GOP committee administrator for the committee. I have not worked with this cool committee before, so I'm very excited. I've spent the last 10 years primarily doing transportation, which they said that there's bonding involved in transportation, so I should easily be able to adapt to this committee. So that's it.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Fu Lee, I represent a part of Minneapolis, North Minneapolis. If you're familiar, I really appreciate having the opportunity to, you know, serve with you this year as our chair of the committee. And a fun fact, you know, Representative Sexton, you mentioned Asia. So this early this winter, I got out of South Korea right before they declared martial law. And then it was Representative Hansen that texted me to see if I was okay. And I was like, what are you talking about? And then I started reading the news and there was martial law in South Korea, and so I made it through, went to Tokyo, and now I'm here. So thank you for the opportunity.
Hi, I'm Luke Frederick. Represent District 18B, Mankato, Eagle Lake, and Skyline. First time on the committee. I'm excited to be here. And fun fact is in the last year, my kids and I have gotten really into cooperative board games. So I don't know if anyone's ever played a game in Monopoly where someone flips the board at the end of it. We've pivoted a little bit, and there's a lot of really good options out there.
Rick Hansen represents South St. Paul, Invergrove Heights, Newport, St. Paul Park, Cottage Grove, and Northern Gray Cloud Island Township. Happy to be on the committee. Fun fact is Representative Hollins made this tie for me, which has little bees on it, and she is extremely talented, if you're nice to her.
Buenos dias. Good morning. My name is Maria Isa Perez Vega. I represent right here in District 65B, the capital city of St. Paul, as well as the suburb of West St. Paul. I am a West Sider, so if you ever want to cross the bridge to the only town in the capital city of St. Paul that you got to actually cross a bridge to get to, I enjoy spending time with my daughter in our amazing barrio, the first Latino community in the state of Minnesota. I have a background in youth education through Cultural Endowment of Arts and touring music with Afro-Caribbean folk in the genre of hip-hop. So I've been able to see how other states and other countries have been able to expand when we talk about bonding, when we look at infrastructure, when we look at technology. So as a first-timer in this committee and my second term, it's going to be, I know, an exciting experience. I had a very fun summer, the last two summers, following you guys on social media and seeing the great work that we've been able to do here in Minnesota. And I look forward to visiting the other districts as well. I love Minnesota. I love visiting outside of St. Paul and have grown up and born and raised in the state. And we've got a powerhouse when it comes to bonding compared to these other states that I've traveled to. And it's a beautiful thing to see. And I'm just grateful to be a part of it. Thank you.
Hi, I'm Liz Ryer. I represent 52A Egan and Burnsville.
Third term in the House, third round on capital investment, and I love this committee. It is, it's so great to be able to go around, see projects, and really understand what it takes to make our state run well. Fun fact, I have been now to almost half of the state parks in Minnesota, and I keep ticking them off.
Yes, y'all, I am representing Jason. I represent Southeast St. Paul, a portion of the capital city here. This is my fourth term in the capital here at the legislature. I'm serving my third term here in the capital investment. Thanks to this very committee for making investments in my district, especially the Kellogg Bridge, which needed a lot of improvement. And so thank you to then Mayor, former leaders of this committee, and looking forward to our tours this fall with you, Madam Chair, and get you on a hybrid vehicle this time.
We have so much opportunity ahead of us for these tours. So much opportunity. Well, thank you for that. Looking forward to a robust committee. And today we are going to be hearing the governor's bonding request for state agencies. Very exciting things about to happen. So first on deck, we have the Department of Military. All right. Next we have up firsthand, the Department of Public Safety will be testifying. So you want to come on up. We have Commissioner Bob Jacobson, Superintendent Drew Evans, and then we have the Chief of Minnesota State Patrol, which is the Colonel Christina Bogoyevich. Did I pronounce that correctly?
Madam Chair, you did.
That would be Karina's doing here. So I would not screw that name up. All right. Well, you may begin with your testimony, whoever wants to go first.
All right. Good morning, everyone. Chair Franson, members of the Capital Investment Committee. As mentioned, my name is Bob Jacobson. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety. It's my honor to be here today. I appreciate you giving us the time from the Department of Public Safety to be here to present on some of our capital budget items this morning. I'll give just a quick overview, and then I'll turn it over to the Colonel and to Superintendent Evans to talk in more detail about those proposals. The Governor and Lieutenant Governor have put forward a strong proposal to help address current issues and the future needs for public safety in Minnesota. Our law enforcement divisions, as you know, serve every community in Minnesota. Building a new lab in Mankato will help evidence turnaround throughout Minnesota, and all of these projects that you see in front of you today will help evidence help address public safety throughout the entire state. The three projects, as you see, number one is building a new Southern BCA regional office and laboratory. The second proposal is expansion of the BCA regional office and laboratory. And then the third is building the Minnesota State Patrol headquarters using trunk highway cash. So to provide you with more detail on each of these projects, I will turn it over to BCA Superintendent Drew Evans and Colonel Christina Bogoyevich.
Go ahead. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee. As the Commissioner noted, my name is Drew Evans. I'm the Superintendent at the Minnesota Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and we appreciate you taking the time today to hear the Governor's bonding recommendations. For those of you that have served on the committee before, these are projects that the Governor has previously recommended to fund at this time. What we're doing when it comes to this and the two facilities for the BCA really are driven primarily by our laboratory space. Our headquarters location is located here in St. Paul over on Maryland Avenue. We house a large number of our staff at that location, but we're completely out of space. That's been driven by a number of different factors over the last 10 plus years. One is testing of sexual assault kits that are required by law. It's increased the volume in our DNA laboratories.
digital evidence. When I started at the BCA, we had one agent that did this part-time as part of their duties. We now have 22 digital evidence examiners doing digital evidence full-time. That's the only thing they do. And they're not sworn law enforcement. They're forensic scientists doing digital evidence examination. Our headquarters facility never even had a laboratory for that. We've converted space there. And in Bemidji and the project I'll talk about there, they're literally working out of a closet in that location. Methamphetamine and opioids, as you've seen, have increased demands on our drug evidence laboratories and our agents statewide. And internet crimes have more than tenfold increased over the last 10 years, less than 10 years, from almost 1,200 cyber tips in 2016 to over 12,000 last year coming in, which is child sexual abuse material and exploitation of children online. As we've noted, those trends have been remarkably consistent. Previously, when I met with you, DNA submissions in particular, we can predict with remarkable accuracy exactly what we anticipate coming into our labs. And while we consistently are looking for efficiencies through technology and different areas, at some point in time, to ensure that we have evidence turnaround times at acceptable levels, we will need to come back to the legislature to fund additional positions to meet those turnaround times. And right now, we simply do not have any additional space to put additional scientists into the future. This is just some quick examples of what we're looking at and how we've had to maximize on the, I think it'd be the right-hand side of your screen. That's actually a gun range, but it's not a gun range for law enforcement. It's a gun range for our laboratory. There's storage of items in that facility that just shouldn't be there. On the left-hand side is just some evidence storage areas that we look for from there. What we're trying to do is meet the needs of our criminal justice partners across Minnesota, and regionalization is the best approach at this point in time for a few reasons. One is that our scientists in particular, that when they have a case, the example I use in southern Minnesota, if they just go to Waseca today, they do their analysis and out of our headquarters location. If they testify, they have to drive to Waseca, wait to testify, and drive back. We lose an entire day. With a regional office, we oftentimes are able to gain capacity just simply by being more closely located to the courthouses that we serve. They drive over from Mankato, testify, and drive back, and still have hours in the day where we can do analysis, being able to complete their casework more efficiently. We also have a training facility. We've been working hard to identify locations across the state. With law enforcement staffing being less than it's been previously, we're looking for ways to be able to provide training more localized to our law enforcement partners. Right now, a lot of our training is done out of our headquarters location. We are working to have 90% of law enforcement within 60 miles of a regional training hub. This location would act as that regional training hub in southern Minnesota, and our training programs train about 6,000 to 9,000 students, law enforcement students, through our programs every single year. We also would reduce the need to transport evidence. We get a lot of evidence in the mail right now, and in the current state of the mail system, that concerns me. Just in my role, I would rather have our law enforcement partners drive their evidence, but when it's a 1-2 person shift at a police department, they simply can't afford to drive 4 hours one direction to drop off evidence. So this would be another location to drop off evidence and be able to make sure that we have that secure transfer. And then it reduces, with those efficiencies, our turnaround time for testing. Right now at our headquarters location, we are over the design capacity of that facility by about 175 staff at that location today. And that's what's driving this need. And if we build Mankato and Bemidji today, we will still really be at capacity for all those facilities once they're fully built. So the original plan, when I've talked to some of you previously, was to staff this building over 20 years. But the plan right now would be to staff it immediately, meaning that some staff would like to relocate immediately. We have people that would like to do that. And then as turnover occurs at our headquarters location, we would open those positions in Mankato, being fully staffed at about 50 positions at that facility in Mankato. As noted, they're highly technical. These are good middle-class jobs that will be located in there. And there's an opportunity as well to work with our Minsky University, Mankato State, in that location to build partnerships both for our digital evidence, our law enforcement, and forensic testing services. This is just an example that they're confined spaces, but it shows that we've maximized the space. It's a little bit difficult to see from a distance here, but all of our cubes are down to 6x6 cubicles so that we've really maximized the footprint we have at our headquarters location and really don't have the ability to do anything more. We're finalizing that right now. Even as an example, our MNJIS, which are IT professionals, all of the managers have I don't remember the exact size of their offices, but we're literally tearing out the physical walls right now to get the offices for our managers and supervisors down to 9x10 so that we can gain additional space even for those cubicles for there. These are some of the specialized space. One of the newer programs, we've expanded the program, is NIBIN, which is the National Integrated Ballistics Information Network. This compares cartridge casings recovered at crime scenes and guns recovered to be able to connect shooting cases across the state. On the left-hand side of that screen, that's a NIBIN terminal where we have people entering that. We have four now in the state. We had one just a few years ago. This is another thing that we would add to Mankato to gain capacity. And so it's these specialized services that we need to look at for there. And then the middle is where we build all the computers for our nearly 800 staff at the BCA. We just simply need additional space for people. And the last is an example. That's an agent's office. We have them sharing offices now, so we've done what we can. However, for laboratory space, this is a great example on the left-hand side. It requires a larger footprint than just office space. If I was here talking to you about some of our other teams, we would be creative with that. Our new violent crime reduction unit, we needed additional space for them. We found a fire station in Maplewood that was 20 years old that wasn't being occupied. We've refurbished that space. It's really the specialized space that we need for training, for our space working together collaboratively. And then, as you can see in our laboratories, they occupy more space because of specialized HVAC, redundant power supply, simply the space you need. Those machines have to be spaced out because they get very warm, so it occupies a particular footprint. So the ask for here, and this has gone up since the last time we met, a couple things that have driven this cost increase are, as part of the pre-design and going through that process, the square footage increase to occupy immediately. As we work through the final design, as we're working on right now, this is really a truly shovel-ready project. We're almost at the finalized design process for this. We're putting desks and places on the blueprints right now as we speak, and all the HVAC and where everything goes. So that drove the space requirements up. The increase, one of the primary drivers is simply the increase in construction costs that continue to rise through this time period. And then, as I noted, the fact that we'll occupy that building immediately. This just lays out the work that's been completed, and we expect the final design to be fully completed by June of 2025. Madam Chair.
Yes. Mr. Evans, what is the increase of cost from the last time you presented?
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. It's about $20 million. So the previous request was for $48 million, and now that the design is nearly finalized as part of that process, it has gone up $20 million to $68.1. We recognize it's an increase in cost. The criticality, really, as I'll continue to note, is if we need to come back to you and seek additional staffing into the future, we simply have no place to put it. This would put us on about a three-year design period, and it would create some of that capacity both at our headquarters and other locations across the state. This is a rendition of that building. One of the other cost drivers with that is as you go through the design standards that are required, just as a kind of inside information on this, is this was required to be a two-story facility so that we can meet the state statute design requirements based on the facility. We own the land. It's next door to the Justice Center at the Blue Earth County Justice Center, and then across the street from our partners at MnDOT and State Patrol. And so because of that, it was required to put a two-story building. We were hoping to buy another parcel. We were unable to come to terms with that person, and so that's part of what it is contributed to the costs as well, in addition to the other items that I noted.
Can the project be phased at all, or?
So, Madam Chair and members, it's a good question. It's a building, so it really can't be phased, but we have been phasing. And so the second part is how we've been working to phase throughout is that we sought the pre-design and land acquisition costs that you previously provided, approximately $4 million for that facility. And that's what we're working to do, is we simply need the space in Bemidji as well. And so we're phasing that as well as part of this request, seeking about $4.2 million for land acquisition costs there. There's a parcel of land owned by the city. They'd be interested in selling it to us. And really what we would be doing, if I can go through this going from here, I can skip right to this part. This demonstrates what the new facility would look like in Bemidji. That facility is approximately 27,000 square feet right now. Ultimately, for our space needs, we need to double the size of that facility to mirror what we're looking at in Mankato. And this is an example of what it would look like. On the right hand of that slide is basically our current existing facility. And I will have packets for you as well that that illustrate this a little more clearly. It would be best for us to build a new building on that new land and connect them. If we don't do that, there will be significant disruptions to our testing activities while they're trying to build on an existing site. This would allow us to just build the building up, connect the two with no disruption to our services that service all of northern Minnesota. The same reasons for this facility is simply that 175 people that were over capacity here and the same demands. This facility services all of northern Minnesota. The Mankato facility will service, and it will be in a handout. If you don't have it, I will make sure that you all have it when we're able to meet with a number of you. The Mankato facility will serve southern and then kind of western Minnesota until we get up to kind of where it meets the northern Minnesota border. So with that, I'm happy to stand for any questions, or I can turn it over to the Colonel for a statement.
Representative Scraba, you have a question?
I do. Thank you, Madam Chair. Superintendent, you had said that the group of people, the forensic electronic people, do they do their jobs from home, or do they, is there a reason? I mean, I did the math on it. It's $1,561 per square foot. That's the biggest number I've ever come up with. I'm assuming that a lot of that is the specialized equipment that's included in this. If you can help me with that. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Superintendent Edmonds.
Madam Chair and Representative Scraba, thank you for the question. It's a good question. Forensic laboratory space is expensive, and that's part of why we're here in front of you today. It is accurate of what you're saying. I mentioned digital evidence, but this will also be a drug laboratory. This will also be a DNA laboratory. When we build a project like this, the equipment is extremely expensive that goes in, and so it is part of the bonding request that it will not only build the actual physical walls, but that it will outfit the facility. So everything we need to do digital evidence examination, same with DNA extraction, each machine that we buy is $150,000 plus that goes into this facility. So that is part of what drives it. It also, when you look at it, the specialized design requirements that are there, things like HVAC, for example, our headquarters location, because of all the chemicals and what's going into our facility, they also have a different HVAC systems that go in. All of our air in the building turns over once an hour in the BCA. That requires specialized equipment to do that, which drives the cost up. If this was an office building, that number would be lower per square foot. It really has to do with the fact that we're building a laboratory. And I will also note, just in case the question is there, we did look as part of the pre-design process if we could retrofit a building. And much to your question, it was just as expensive as building a building from scratch. We also, knowing that it's an expensive building, work with the designers to tell them, as we're designing this facility, it really needs to be designed for 50 years plus, because we know it is a significant investment, and we are going to need a long-term service out of this building to make sure that we're not coming back to you with expensive buildings such as this.
Great. Thank you, Representative Scraba. Thank you, Superintendent Evans. Next, we have Representative Sexton.
Superintendent Evans, great to see you again. My question is, as a resident of southern Minnesota, you haven't talked much about the training side of your facility, and would that portion of the facility avail itself to other law enforcement agencies in the area, and how would you work and schedule that?
Sorry, Superintendent Evans.
Madam Chair, Representative Sexton, yes. So it's designed to be a facility that would have right in our main entrance, that's a training room, would house 40 to 60 students on a regular basis. We would schedule our own training courses at that time, but one of the things that we do as a law enforcement partner across the state, if they approach us and want to hold another training, we may or may not even be involved with our training division, but it would be available for them to use. We don't charge a cost for that. The only times that there's a cost is a lot of times we cater in food so that we can shorten the amount of time students have to be there so they can travel back and forth to their agency as part of their day, and in those cases they pay for their own food, but we don't charge them for that facility. And so it would be available to all of our partners in southern Minnesota, but then we would bring our training programs. And you provide, you may not be aware, funding, because it's required by statute for the BCA to provide training to law enforcement, so it's subsidized. And so our training is very economical for our law enforcement partners. We adjust our fees only so that it becomes a cost neutral program, so that we can give that to them at low a cost as possible. And we will be holding courses at that on an ongoing regular basis.
All right. Representative Hansen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And, you know, over the last 10 years, I think we've toured a lot of training facilities and training centers. And just last week, some of us in Dakota County toured the Smart Center, you know, the Hero Center in Cottage Grove. We've funded a lot of training centers. So, you know, is it better to have distributed regional or localized centers? How much work can be done there? Also, just noting that, you know, with the Echo baby boom shrinking, and we're going to have a tremendous amount of higher education facilities that are going to be having empty buildings, particularly as we move to online more education. So our complement as bonding and capital investment is we're going to have a lot of buildings. And every new building we build, you know, we keep building these new buildings. And then capacity, it's a lot more fun to build new buildings. It is harder, but there is an environmental gain of using the embedded energy in those facilities that are already built, plus the maintenance of those buildings if we are going to be vacating higher education buildings in the next 10 years, which I believe we will be. And how do we deal with this? I know your need right now, and you can demonstrate that, but we have to look at this very big picture of our state facilities and how do we handle that capacity that we exist right that has exists right now.
Superintendent Evans.
Chair and Representative Hansen, it's a good question. So I'll answer it in twofold. One is that just to be clear, the laboratory is driving the need for this building 100% in the space that they need. And, you know, as noted, we looked very critically at a number of buildings in the Mankato area, knowing that that should be the service area. And it simply was not cost effective to retrofit one of those buildings. The infrastructure that needed to go into it would drive the cost in nearly the same. The training question is a good question, and I think it's one that's worthwhile wrestling with, you know, for all of you. I should be clear, this is a room that would house that number of people. It's a dual purpose room. We hold our training there, but we also use it as a room when we have all team meetings with our entire staff. It's the only place in the building that would accommodate that level of 50 people that'll be there. A lot of the centers that you're talking about, we use at the BCA. We don't create redundancies in them because they're more specialized space. They often have firearms laboratories, you know, driving ranges, et cetera. This will not encompass this. This is classroom training that we're doing for law enforcement that align with that. And then we are also, as the BCA, using those facilities. We hold trainings right now. We've transitioned some of our training because of parking problems we have at headquarters, frankly, that we just can't accommodate the team. At the Hero Center, for example. So we're consistently looking at how best to utilize those, knowing that you funded them and that we will continue to utilize those spaces as a state agency, too, when it makes sense.
Thank you, Superintendent Evans. Yes, Representative Frederick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll just say that I'm very hopeful that we can get the money for this project. I think the need is there. I've heard from law enforcement the challenges of just getting evidence up to St. Paul, which you've talked about here. And also to your point about the cost, like it'd be just as expensive to renovate, you know, an old building if it is on a university. I can say in Mankato, housing is a very big challenge that we're having. And so if we as a committee want to talk about how to reuse some of those buildings that may be empty in the future, we can bond for housing as well. So I'm just saying we have lots of options out there. Thank you, Madam Chair.
All right. Seeing no other questions, continue on.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Christina Bogoyevich. I have the honor of serving as the Colonel of the Minnesota State Patrol. As the Commissioner stated, our project was outlined in the Governor's recommended budget to be funded from trunk highway cash. This headquarters project, we received $22.5 million last year for design and land acquisition. This request is for the build. This would take six antiquated metro spaces, putting it under one roof. We have our East and West Metro operational districts that serve all of the metro counties. Then we also have training, commercial vehicles, headquarters, and investigative services that serve all of Minnesotans. Again, this would bring those six sites under one roof, really building synergy with leadership from those different districts, allowing collaboration between those work groups, and really modernizing the way we work within the state agencies. So I'll start here. Again, this project, we're requesting $97 million. That's $48.5 million in 2026 and $48.5 million in 2027. This will provide many benefits, as I mentioned. You'll hear me talk about CALEA, which is a national accreditation for our agency that we've been working through. It has really pointed out some deficiencies that we are seeing with evidence collection, evidence storage, and things like that. Again, these are the six sites throughout the metro that we are looking to bring under one roof. This is our headquarters space in downtown St. Paul. As I mentioned, there is lack of public parking. There's no signs out front. There's no signs inside to allow the public to see or to a welcoming space for them to come into. On the picture on the right here, as you're looking up, this is our office space that we also have to use as some storage space because we have run out of space in all of our offices throughout the metro. This is our East Metro District headquarters. The table on the left here, we call it our multi-purpose table. This is where employees eat their lunch. This is where our investigators sort through evidence, and this is also where we bring families to talk to that have lost family members in fatal crashes. This is the only meeting space we have in our East Metro office. On the right, you can see this is where our investigators work out of. We have three full-time investigators in our East Metro district. Again, West Metro is very much the same. We have the one communal table where, again, lunch is eaten, evidence is handled, and we meet with victims' families. On the right here, this is our 4,700 training room. However, there's not a lot of room for training because that's where we also keep all of the equipment for training in our commercial vehicles division. Again, I go back to evidence storage and how it aligns with our CALEA accreditation. It's inadequate or non-existent. We've run out of room in all of our metro spaces. Vehicle storage, we have specialty vehicles placed throughout the metro. MnDOT has been graceful enough to allow us some garage space, but many of these vehicles right now are being stored outside. Again, with vehicle storage on the left there, you can see this is a crash vehicle that we are holding for evidence, but we don't have any evidence storage or secure storage outside. On the right here, you can see the white car in the back here. That is actually a forfeited vehicle that is being stolen from our evidence lot because we don't have a secure space for those vehicles. And then you can also see many squad cars. If a trooper is involved in a crash or their vehicle breaks down, these are the squad cars that they go and get. Normally takes quite a while to get them started, to get them cleared off, ready to go, which just prolongs their response. And quickly, I know the superintendent also talked about the specialty air filtration. We've had to make moderate adjustments in our offices to ensure that we have at least temporary air filtration systems in both East and West Metro. And with that, I'm open for questions.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Colonel Bogoyevich. We're going to learn that. Whoever put the little things on here, I appreciate that. Bogoyevich. So we're going to learn that. Thanks for presenting again today. A couple questions here. What happens, and if I missed it, I'm sorry, but what happens to the six remaining locations and facilities if you're combining into one location?
I'm still trying to get used to this whole thing. Superintendent Evans. Or, sorry.
Colonel.
Sorry. Okay, I'm going to have to try it again, okay? Colonel Bogoyevich?
Madam Chair, Representative, that's a good question. Most of those buildings would go back. Yep. Again, we're just leasing those spaces either from MnDOT or from private parties. We would probably outfit one or two to still have station offices for troopers to go in and complete crash reports, things like that, but we would be downsizing the footprint of those.
Madam Chair, Colonel, is there a lease savings as a result of giving up some of those?
Colonel?
Madam Chair, Representative, yes, there would be a lease savings in those because we would be returning those to the NDOT.
Madam Chair, if maybe we could get a follow-up offline of what those savings would be. That would be helpful. Okay. The other point that I wanted to address, and you heard it in other committees, you heard it hopefully as loud and clear as I did in the other body in terms of using the trunk highway funds that is under the governor's request at this point. For members, the 20-some million dollars to design and pre-plan this building was already out of the trunk highway fund. We have a strong position in that committee across the board, and looks like it's bicamerally. Very concerning that we need to stop trunk highway robbery, and that's the way we look at this. Taking money out of roads and bridges that affect all of our districts throughout the state, those are precious dollars that are limited, and we're falling behind on our road maintenance and safety improvements. And so we're looking at spending well over $100,000, or $100 million for out of the trunk highway fund, and we have very, very strong concerns in opposition to using that. What other options do you have to fund this building?
Colonel, are you okay if I just call you Colonel? Okay, thank you.
Madam Chair, Representative, we have heard you. I look forward to any future conversations we can have about how we can fund this building. Again, this was outlined in the governor's budget request, but I'm more than willing and know that there's other ways we can get this done.
Representative.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate that. So we're being heard, but I want to, you know, it's been over the last couple weeks that this issue has been brought up. I brought it up myself in a previous meeting directly with you. I'll ask one more time if either the commissioner or colonel, what other funding options are there to fund this building instead of the trunk highway fund?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Koznick, appreciate the question. And we have, as the colonel has mentioned, heard you and others loud and clear. First of all, I just wanted to note that I appreciate the support that I've heard through all the committees and through talking with many of you for you know, our public safety needs. We know that addressing public safety needs in the state of Minnesota sometimes is very expensive, and we understand that. We come here from DPS understanding that this is a big ask, but this we also come here with, and I come here with the belief that this is a tremendous need for the Department of Public Safety, both for the facilities, for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and for the Minnesota State Patrol. We would certainly look for guidance and suggestions from others if there are other ways to go about funding this proposal, whether it be the traditional bonding proposal or others. But we come forward with this, you know, the governor's proposal as it is today. But again, we also understand that it's a big ask. As the Commissioner of Public Safety, I've been here since January 2nd of 2023. I've just passed my first 2 years as a Commissioner of Public Safety. One of the things that has become crystal clear to me through my first few weeks up through my first 2 years is that the space needs for both the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension and the Minnesota State Patrol have been a tremendous priority for me as the commissioner, and I know for the governor and for many of you. And again, we know that what we're asking is significant, but again, it's a need. We look forward to working with you. We are open to any ideas on how to get this done, but we do think it's a critical need, and I appreciate all the questions and the suggestions.
All right, thank you, Representative Koznick.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I'll just wrap up. I appreciate that there is some openness, and we've been heard, not just myself, but the other chambers, other members that you've spoken to. I know it's harder to pass a request as a general obligation bond, but I think that serves the state and represents the state a lot more directly than robbing the trunk highway fund. And I will say, you know, different sides of the political spectrum have kind of holy grails and things that they uplift and are very high priorities. And I recognize that on our side of the aisle, and I think it's shared. We appreciate the work that the state troopers do, that our public safety does, but there is no holy grail that shouldn't be questioned in terms of our financing. That's what our task is. It might not be politically comfortable sometimes to tell our public safety that we're going to question the dollars that are being expended. This is a very large amount of money, and like we said, we previously in the committee in previous years granted use of the trunk highway funds, and the understanding at that time, members, was that when they go to build the building, it's going to come from other sources. We provided the funds through the trunk highway fund for the planning and design, and so it's disappointing to see the governor's recommendation not hold to that spirit of previous discussions. So we appreciate the work you do. It's very important work that you do, but our job is also to analyze the best use in providing the needs. And just because somebody has a need or a request, it doesn't mean that it doesn't get checked. So we're not questioning the work that you do or the importance, but I am questioning strongly both the dollar amount and where it's coming from. So I hope that we will, well, I know we will have further discussion about it, and appreciate some creative solutions that are brought to the table from your department.
Thank you, Representative Kosnick. And with that about creative solutions, we do have a lot of needs across the state. You know, the last numbers I heard, we had over $6 billion, I think, last year in bonding requests around the state. So, and then our bonding dollars are becoming more limited as costs keep skyrocketing. With that, Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and maybe to the Colonel. So I see on page 19 of the presentation on the map, you said optimal location and new facility. So my understanding was that over the last few years, when we have this discussion, we really haven't secured a location yet. And so in the maps, it seems like it's somewhere between Minneapolis, Richfield, Edina. Do we have a location set now then?
Commissioner Jacobson or Colonel?
Madam Chair, Representative, mm-hmm. That's a good question. In the last several months, we've reviewed 27 different pieces of property throughout the metro. It's been difficult to find the land needed. However, we did put an offer in about 6 to 8 weeks ago, only to be outbid by a investor or a developer. And so we now have narrowed it back down to two other properties. But yes, we are looking within that 494 loop.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So what is the timeline of, you know, acquisition of land and, you know, for this appropriation that you're coming before us? Is that going to include acquisition in that, or is this just for the construction of the facility, and do we already have secure funding for the acquisition of the site?
Colonel.
Madam Chair, Representative, we do. We received the $22.5 million last year, and that is for the land acquisition and the design. So this money would be specifically for the build.
Representative Lee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So last follow-up, and just so that we understand, so what is your timeline of when you can secure that acquisition? Should we move forward with this proposal and appropriation, would you be sitting on the funding if we were to have this be successful, or is your timeline fitting that, you know, if we could get a bonding bill through this year, that, you know, we could actually acquire the land and actually start construction and all the biddings and whatnot?
Colonel.
Madam Chair, Representative, once we acquire that land, so once we close on the land, we already have the design, architectural design, so it would be approximately 10 months for them to finish that design and to build, is what we've been working with the Department of Administration on that timeline.
Anyone else have further questions? No? All right. Well, I want to thank the three of you for testifying and taking time out of your day to present, and I'm sure we'll be in touch. And if you have further discussion, my office is open, and I'm sure Chair Lee's office will be open as well. Thank you.
Do you want to drive this?
right. Next, we have the Department of Military Affairs. Thank you for taking time out of your day. I have two names on here, so we have a third one. You'll have to let us know who you are. But I have Don Cure, the Executive Director, and Major General Sean Mankey.
Yes, Madam Chair, that's correct.
Okay, great. And proceed.
Madam Chair, committee members, hey, thanks for taking the time today to hear our request. I'm fortunate and honored to be the Adjutant General of the Minnesota National Guard, representing the nearly 13,000 soldiers and airmen that make up our organization. So this request as well was submitted last year by the governor. Next slide, please, Eric. So, and this request is for hangar design money for our 148th Fighter Wing in Duluth, Minnesota. This wing flies the newest version of the F-16s that the Air Force has, F-16s Block 50s. And the request is for $3 million for bond, or for money for the design of new hangars for these aircraft. Next slide, please. The existing hangars, some of the existing hangars that we use are nearly 70 years old. And you can see a picture of them here. So they were built, and then when Duluth used to be an Air Force base, these were actually moved over to the existing location that they're at now. But you can see there's some leakage issues with water and whatnot, which is a hazard. And as we want to keep Duluth relevant for the future and potentially pursue the next generation Air Force fighter or next generation Air Force fighter airplane, we think it's paramount that we have facilities that would support that and allow us to compete for federal dollars to support these aircraft. So these are two aircraft that the Air National Guard and the U.S. Air Force are currently flying, the F-15EX and the F-35. And because Duluth has Block 50 F-16s, which we currently fly and we still deploy around the world to do our nation's business, these are what the Duluth would like to compete for in the future. So why, you may ask, why you want to fund the hangar? Future decisions likely will look at infrastructure that we have in the state of Minnesota and these various wings for bed down location. So Duluth, the 148th is a major employer in the Duluth area. And additionally, there's a bunch of money that comes into economically for Duluth. As well as Duluth, as said, is the seventh largest employer. The 148th is the seventh largest employer in Duluth, and about $3.6 million annually in fire protection services that are used at the Duluth Airport up there, as well as other smaller ancillary items that the wing provides. We have an explosive ordnance detachment up there that does work for first responders up there if needed, as well as recently we had a fatality search and rescue team that was deployed through the Emergency Mutual Aid Compact to Florida and then North Carolina during the hurricane to do some of our nation's work down there. So this is an investment in Duluth to make them relevant for the future for the next generation of fighter aircraft and to keep the mission going in Duluth, much like we were successful in securing modernization for the 133rd Airlift Wing here in Minneapolis-St. Paul with the C-130J model. Pending your questions, that's what I have for you today.
Representative Kosnick.
Thank you. Those bagels are making me chatty today, Madam Chair.
I was going to make a comment, but I'll keep it to myself.
Normally, I stay relatively quiet. I know that Duluth also has a request for a traffic control tower that's not affiliated with your facility or this project. Is that correct, just to clarify?
Madam Chair, Representative, that is correct. It's not affiliated with that project.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Appreciate the time.
Representative Sexton.
Good morning. One thing I failed to disclose with my introduction is I'm a retired full colonel, and I did have the privilege of teaching at the Army War College for the last 4 years of my service. So a little bit of background. One of the kiss of deaths, quite frankly, for most Air National Guard bases is to do MILCON, and then all of a sudden they move the aircraft. Has there been any assurances that we're going to keep the F-16, that particular model, in there? Because I can tell you, Springfield, Illinois, built 50 hangars, and then the Air Force moved the aircraft. I've seen that in multiple states around the country. Our nation's changes its mind frequently and will move things around.
Major.
Madam Chair, Representative Sexton, hey, great question. You know, if we all knew what the Air Force was going to do, we'd probably be a lot smarter than we are today. I will tell you the 148th is manned at 103% of their strength. It's one of the only Air National Guard fighter wings that is manned to that strength, and that was one of the strengths of the Minnesota National Guard. I would also tell you that they fly Block 50s, which is the newest version of the F-16, and the mission that they do on the federal side is suppression of enemy air defense, and it's one of the few Air National Guard wings that does that mission. It's always a risk, but I think the risk in moving the aircraft from that unit is not as high as it will be from some of the Air National Guard wings that are in our nation.
Representative Sexton.
Just based on the design, though, I mean, they could easily convert to a drone unit with the airspace they have. I'm very familiar with Duluth. I used to work up there. They could convert to another C-130 unit. So the hangar design that's been presented is very specific to a fighter-type aircraft. I know Duluth would love to stay a fighter-type unit. They've got a long, proud history of that. But, again, that is always the concern is build a new hangar, and all of a sudden the aircraft move, and that came out of state funds, not federal funds.
Would you like to address that at all, Major?
Madam Chair, Representative Sexton, you are correct. There's risk in that, but we think in order to compete for the next generation investment from the state for some of these facilities, and if some of the other facilities go away from Duluth, I mean, there's risk with the fire department there that provides all of the fire services for the Duluth International Airport, as well as the local community, as well as the other services that the wing provides in some areas. So again, we look at this as an investment in longevity of the 148th and the mission up there, and not only the federal mission, but all that they do for the state of Minnesota and the community.
Representative Scraba.
Thank you. Being from Ely, I hear the sorties all the time flying around. If you go to Babbitt, they do them over Babbitt. It's kind of cool. People are always like, what is that? I'm like, well, it's just the boys and girls having some fun, you know, making sure we're safe. And that's where maybe more of a comment than a I think it's important that we at least set up the hangars, do this, showing the Air Force that we are committed, and I realize that can change. Sometimes that's political. Sometimes that's totally out of everybody's control. But again, I think if we, and we have been looked at before downsizing, it has been on the chopping block, and we've won. Congressman Oberstar did a great job. Different political parties have helped us throughout this. But I look at, right now we have drones. I guide canoe trips. I'm on the border. The drone flies over, you know, Wednesdays at 2 o'clock, you know, whatever. You can set your clock to when the drones come and go. The fact is we still need boots on the ground. We still need people to see, you know, I know we can go, but I feel confident that if we do invest in our community and we do talk to our political leaders and tell them how important it is that we keep this base, particularly this base, that it will prevail. But I think starting it is this first. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Major General.
Madam Chair, Representative, hey, thank you for the comment. I mean, I couldn't agree with you more, but I mean, that's why I'm here today. I think it's an investment into Duluth, into the wing, and you know, it's something our nation needs, I believe, and something that the community benefits from tremendously.
Okay, do we have any other questions? Oh, yes, that's right, I forgot, Representative Allen.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I had a question for you, Major General. As with my background working for congressional office, we always look for multiple sources of funding when it came to particular projects like this. Have you guys talked with anybody along the lines for dual funding, either coming from like Air Force, DOD, MILCON?
Major General.
Madam Chair, Representative, this is for the design only. The building of the actual facility would certainly be federal MILCON dollars that we would leverage for that.
Okay.
Major General. Representative Allen, I've got 500 things going on up here. Sorry.
It's almost like being an air traffic controller, isn't it?
Well, I don't think I do a good job at that, so.
I have a hard enough time keeping up with my kids most times. So, I appreciate hearing that because as you're looking at a price tag of $28 million, it just kind of rough estimate, any idea of how much that would bring that down in terms of what the state responsibility could potentially be if MILCON kicks in on something like this? And thank you.
Major General?
Madam Chair, Representative, we would go after the full $28 million federally funded once the design is complete.
Next up, we have Representative Perez Vega.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I thank you for your service. I kind of got my answer just from regards with the federal funding, what was coming in. I have a hangar for Blackhawk in my district, it's deteriorating. So I've been kind of getting those numbers and what the federal level is funding there. So you kind of gave me that answer in your question, Representative Allen, so I appreciate it. Thank you.
See, we're already a bipartisan committee, and we haven't even finished the first full committee hearing yet. So any other questions for our testifiers? No? Okay. Would you like to add anything else to your presentation that isn't printed?
Just Madam Chair and the committee members, hey, thank you for your time this morning. If there's further details or further information that you want, please reach out to the agency, and we'd be more than happy to set up with something with you anytime. Thank you.
Well, thank you for presenting, and thank you for your service as well. Appreciate that. And all right. Members, the next thing that I have on here, I haven't sent out an email yet, but we have an extra credit tour on Monday after session, okay, to go visit the Xcel Energy Center. So if you would like to tour the facility and see what their bonding proposal will look like in person, I encourage you to join me after session. And they're working on parking logistics, and as I get more information, I will let you know. I've been meaning to send out an email, but I thought I would just give you the good news here in person. So with that, I believe that we can adjourn our meeting. Let's see here, what do we got? Oh, our next committee hearing will be on Thursday. All right, and then with that, we are adjourned.